If you listen to the show, you already know that we cannot exist without our sponsors. They are the ones who make things happen behind the scenes. So let's acknowledge Fuji Sports. We've been working with these guys for a while now, not only as far as this podcast is concerned, but also at the Roll Academy. We've had their gear. I personally use their gis. What a phenomenal product.
Yeah, I mean, jiu-jitsu, judo, MMA, tape, bags, anything you need for your jiu-jitsu journey, you can find at fujisports.com.
Let's talk Roll TV. There's so much content on there. It's ridiculous at this point. But I think what is even more intriguing, as time went on during the project, we've been recording most of the events that were taking place here at Roll Academy. At this point, I mean, we have guys like Chris Howder, Armin Fadi, Rafael Lovato Sr., and Pete the Greek. I mean, there were so many different events that we've kind of recorded it. Don't you think that's amazing? I mean, it's points of reflection and kind of going back for all the students to see what really happened and refresh their memory.
Yeah, I think it's great, you know, being able to go back and look at all these high-level practitioners, Octavio Cudo, like one of the names you didn't mention. And I mean, just these guys that have been doing this for so long come in, teach these amazing seminars and workshops, and it's all recorded and there for you to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to get an additional savings on all this, type in code ROLLRADIO at the coupon and get additional 30% off of your membership.
Nice. Go to rollacademy.tv. What's up, everyone, and welcome back. If you haven't already, please remember to hit the like, share, subscribe, download, listen, and whatever other button there is, and leave us a review wherever you do listen. That ensures that we can continue bringing you the great guests and amazing content you have come to expect. On this episode, we have a fifth degree black belt who has been on the mats since the age of 10. Out of a small town in Texas, he currently leads one of the highest ranked competition teams in the world. Today, Bruno Bastos joins us to discuss how he started jiu-jitsu by accident, how to deal with pressure, the importance of perspective, and a ton more. Here's the Roll Radio with fifth degree black belt, IBJJF Masters Gi and No Gi World Champion, and owner instructor at Bastos Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and Fitness, Professor Bruno Bastos.
Welcome to Roll Radio.
And we are live.
Here we go.
How are you?
I'm good.
How was your weekend?
My weekend was fantastic.
Was it?
Yeah. We did some really awesome stuff here.
Are you going to say anything about it?
Well, yeah. No, I was. I forgot to mute everything.
You were preoccupied.
I was. We had a seminar here. Yeah. It was pretty amazing with Robert Drysdale.
Yeah.
And great little tips on things that on open guard. That was a lot of fun. And greatly appreciated.
So. I can't wait for his new book. He talked about it a lot, and I'm waiting for it to arrive. We're supposed to get a box of it, and I can't wait to dip into it, especially because it is highly focused on Carson Gracie Sr., which is
who?
Yeah, which is directly connected to my roots. So I love to have that read. But what a phenomenal weekend! Listen, another thing cool thing happened is, completely by accident, I did find BJJSuccess.com. It just popped up on my screen coincidentally last week. And Marco, who runs the blog, rated us number four podcast.
Number four,
nice. Best pod jiu-jitsu podcast. So, you know, I want to give Marco a shout out.
That's amazing.
BJJSuccess.com, if you're interested in different parts of jiu-jitsu on and off the mat and business side and all the other things. You know, he does write about it quite a bit, and give him a read. I mean, it's cool stuff. And Marco, we do appreciate the kind words and listing us all the way up top, as far as the podcasts are concerned. And don't forget, why are you laughing?
I'm not laughing.
Don't forget to cast your vote. We started doing this just handful episodes ago. If you go to our website, theroadradio.com, you can cast your vote on the best episode, your favorite episode, and we'll be sending out some T-shirts for those who do take a vote. Who wouldn't want a free T-shirt? So
everybody will go into a pool. We'll pick a name.
We'll send you a T-shirt. Why not? You know, tell us which ones you like, and we'll read the cool comments on the air. We'll start doing that fairly soon. So don't wait. Just go take a minute and drop us your thoughts on the episodes that we've done in the past. And it's been 145 of them already. So there's something to pick from for everybody.
Yeah, hopefully there's one in there you like.
Hopefully. Hopefully. Shall we begin this?
Yes, let's do it.
Professor Bruno, thank you for being here. Thanks for joining us today. How is Texas?
Hi, Thomas. Hi, Gary. Thank you guys for the opportunity. Texas, now we're getting close to the summer, right? So on the summer, going to be very hot. but I'm in Midland, Texas, so the West Texas, so on the desert. That part of the year, normally the days are hot, but not too hot. But then, like, we have a saying that if you're not happy with the weather, you just have to wait 5 minutes. So today, like, a storm, I think, coming up. So the weather is already different today.
You say you are in the middle of the desert and it is not too hot. What is hot? What is hot to you? We are in Chicago. We have a different perception of warm.
Yeah. Like, can get close. Can be like 115. Close.
Damn.
110. Like, a normal hot going to be like 105. It can go over 110.
Let me ask you a stupid question. Do you run air conditioning in the academy? My students complain sometimes.
Sure.
My students sometimes complain when the temperature is a little bit higher than like 72. I can't even imagine at your academy when it's so hot outside.
Here, all we have the AC on, all you have the heater on. Right? No, we have a big facility. We have two air showers, everything. So there's a big facility. One of the mats is like a little over 2,000 square feet, and then the mat two is a little over 1,300 square feet. So it's like we need to have. It's very very rare that we don't have anything on. It's just like one of those days where we have like the perfect weather, like 70 something, and then no need to turn anything on. Right. But other than that, and then when like the students are all inside, we have two classes going on at the same time, people in the waiting area, all this, and then the human heat, like the AC has to be on, right? But like I grew up without AC. I didn't even know what was heater until I moved out of Brazil, you know. So like for me, it's normal to train without it, but I understand people that cannot train without it.
Yeah. And so speaking of that, you started your journey in 1990s, if I'm reading that correctly. So you've been on the mat for a while. I mean, 30 plus years at this point. A long time doing this jiu-jitsu stuff, isn't it?
Exactly. I started back in 1990, May of 1990. I will not be able to remember exactly what day of the month. I was just 10 years old. I'm 43 now. I'm going to complete 33 years now of jiu-jitsu. But I remember my first class, how it was, how it went, everything.
So whose idea was it? Was it your parents or was it you? You're 10 years old, and how do you get to jiu-jitsu?
So I have two cousins, Fernanda and Andrea, who are black belts as well, that they were doing jiu-jitsu already. But I never care about, like, a lot of Brazilians, I was all about soccer, right? Mm-hmm. Then 1988, I saw Aurelio Miguel winning a gold medal in judo for Brazil at the Seoul Olympic Games. And for me, that was the first time that I saw something that I could connect to real life, right? That wasn't a movie, wasn't Bruce Lee, Chuck Norris, or anything like that. Wasn't Karate Kid. Was like a real person winning like a gold medal, like defeating other people in a tournament. So, and I don't even know why I was watching that specifically, because the Seoul Games, like Asia, so that was very early in Brazil. Well, I always wake up early as a kid, and then that was on a weekend. So I put the TV on, and then it was on, and that's how I watch it. And then since then, I wanted to be a judoka. That was my dream, like as a kid. Oh, I want to be a judoka Olympic champion like Aurelio Miguel. So I begged my mom. We didn't have the financial means to be training. So almost two years later, then when she finally had opportunity to sign us up, didn't have any judo schools around our neighborhood. And then my uncle told us, like, well, like, Fernanda and Andrea doing their jiu-jitsu things, kind of like judo. So I think the kids are going to enjoy, you should sign them up. And so that's how end up signing up in jiu-jitsu, by, let's say, by accident, right? So that's how, like, so was me asking my mom, but wasn't for jiu-jitsu, was for judo. And then, so I like to say that I didn't choose jiu-jitsu, jiu-jitsu chose me.
Oh, that's a good way. Yeah. So talk about the judo part a little bit. A lot of guys who have grown up and have grew up in Brazil, who come from Brazil and do jiu-jitsu, they have judo background. I mean, I think even Bustamante talked about it quite a bit on the show and a couple handful others. Mm-hmm. You know, it is a very popular sport, but it's a very different sport than judo. I mean, than jiu-jitsu. I mean, just even by rule set and what you're trying to achieve and so on, right? Why do you think judo was so popular in Brazil back then?
It still is, I think, because being an Olympic sport, so that brings a different type of a glamour, let's put it that way, right? And then Brazil being successful in Olympic Games, most of the Olympic Games, Brazil have medalists in judo. Regardless of what's going to be a gold, silver, or bronze, I think that helps the popularity of the sport, right? People associate to discipline, education, like all that, right? So I think that's why, like, it is so popular in Brazil, where, like, jiu-jitsu nowadays, we're going to have that aspect of the discipline and everything. But if you go back on the 80s, the 90s, like all the Vale Tudos or the rivalry for the martial arts, I think that was like hurting jiu-jitsu a little bit. And that would help, like judo in the case, to have that popular to people do judo like more.
Yeah, I actually looked up the Olympic medals for Brazil. And starting from 84... every Olympic, Brazil has placed at least one medal, at least one. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that gives you an idea for those who are listening how popular and how much weight there is placed on the judo as a sport in Brazil. Is that something that you see on daily basis? Meaning, are there like actual judo clubs or is it more of a... you know, you go to jiu-jitsu academies and there's judo part of it, or what does that look like? Judo is not as popular in the United States. Jiu-jitsu is by far more popular than judo, right? And it's so interesting to hear that judo has a big presence in Brazil still to this day.
Yes, it is still a big presence. I would say that jiu-jitsu is bigger now, right? As a number of practitioners and everything. Jiu-jitsu got professional, more the jiu-jitsu grew, right? And because jiu-jitsu is always, is also easier, right? On the body and everything. So like, you don't want to see him. You can see a guy on the 40s, 50s signing up for jiu-jitsu. You don't want to see a guy in the 40s signing up for judo. Or for wrestling, for example, right?
We're laughing because that's when we started.
It is rough, yeah. You know. So I think jiu-jitsu is much easier in that sense. All right, but like if you go back when I start jiu-jitsu, for example, there was a path for judo. Like you had some universities that you could get like a full ride by being a world class judoka, right? Where that didn't have that in jiu-jitsu. So I think that it's kind of like the United States. Oh, my kid's good in baseball. Hope he can get a scholarship or football or like volleyball, whatever it is, right? But that is normal in the United States. You associate sports to a career, a college path. Either going to be D1, D2, D3, whatever it is, right? You like you get a full ride or like at least like a percentage or this, all that stuff. Like in Brazil, it's not that normal, but you are able to do that. You're able to do that through judo in Brazil back then. Nowadays, because I've been in the United States since 2009, so I don't know how it's working now. That sense, and then the place that because I end up training judo as well, and then the place that I end up training judo, at University of Gama Filho, does not even exist anymore, right? So I don't know how is the judo scenario in Brazil nowadays, as far as like clubs, academies, all that stuff. And then, but I know that the jiu-jitsu grew a lot is like academies, like schools, jiu-jitsu schools, like methodology and everything. And I think that's why like you're gonna see more jiu-jitsu than judo in Brazil, but this judo is still big. You're gonna have especially like in São Paulo, Rio de Janeiro, Minas Gerais, and Rio Grande do Sul, like big clubs with a lot of world class judokas.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, judo is still extremely popular around the world. I did that research recently, and I think it was number five top sports in the world. I mean, here in the United States, judo is definitely not the most popular sport, but around the world, especially in Europe, I know it has a lot of following, a lot of practitioners, a lot of popularity behind it. And I think we do see some of that during Olympics, during Summer Olympics, when judo is definitely has that presence on the screen when we watch those. So you start jiu-jitsu at age of 10, but your desire is judo. How do you feel? Yeah. Do you remember how you feel stepping on the mat for first time? And like, this is not what you wanted to do. Yet you find yourself in this jiu-jitsu environment, you know, on jiu-jitsu mat. What are your first thoughts? What's your first impression of jiu-jitsu?
I was just excited to learn something because I saw, like, I remember that I went one day and then watched the class, and then I see the throws and then the submissions, and then I'm like, man, that's really like judo, right? So I was sold on that idea. I sold on that idea because my first instructor, Master José Nori, he always worked with throws as well. So I for me, like even though I was doing jiu-jitsu, I was sort of the idea that I was doing something that was similar, right? And then I was always competitive. And then I remember my first class was on a Wednesday, and then he was reminding the students on the end of the class about the in-house tournament on a Saturday, on the following Saturday. And then I raised my hand and like, can I compete as well?
Wait a minute.
After one day,
you want to compete?
Yeah, because like on my mind, like my mom, she had, wasn't like nowadays you sign a contract or you pay a E up front, like those things, right? So like it was like month to month, and then my mom had a money for 1 month. So I was like, I want to do everything that I possibly can on that
the most out of it.
So like, I annoy him so much on the 2 days that I train that I end up competing on the in-house tournament. So my third day ever in jiu-jitsu was an in-house tournament.
And how did it go?
the first match I won, I just did a headlock on the kid and they exposed like there is nothing else left in planet Earth. Right. I was just being rough, physical, and then but then the second match I competed against a kid that was really good. Have like I remember his name, Rafael. He had never lost like a tournament back then, and then like he just like toyed me around, and then like he was nice to me. But I like the idea that I competed. You know?
You win one match, you lose another match, so you get the best out of the both worlds, right? Mm-hmm. You have the satisfaction of the victory, but yeah, there is this bitterness of not somebody is being better than you. You know, being only a few days into jiu-jitsu, does that give you the fuel to train more? Or are you thinking like, you know, I can't do this? You know, what's going through your mind by literally jumping into competition first week?
I can't say like that I remember all the emotions going to the tournament as a 10-year-old boy, but I can tell you this, like, I saw the kids that were on the podium for the gold medal, and I knew that I want to be on that spot. So I was going Monday to Friday, like every day, wouldn't miss. My mom quickly didn't have to make any punishment or timeout. It was just like, oh, if you don't clean up or don't do this, you don't go to jiu-jitsu. Was it? Was it? Well, that was the magic word. You're not going to jiu-jitsu. That was it. And so I trained about 3 weeks, and then I went to another, we went to a tournament, and then I lost to my cousin on the final. By the time he was training for over 4 years already, and I was training for like three or four weeks. So I still joke with him that I have never got my rematch, right? And then in a tournament about another 3 or 4 weeks after that, then I won my first tournament. So I was training about like almost 2 months of jiu-jitsu. And then I compete on a tournament like the Rio de Janeiro as well. And then I won. And man, that for me was a click as well, because back then, like, my dad and my mom, they were separated, and then that was the weekend of my dad. So he was in the tournament with us. My mom, of course, was there with us. And then like, okay, but it's Sunday, so I have to go back to my mom's home. So my dad gave us a ride. And then he's ended up staying overnight. So as a 10-year-old boy, I thought, well, I won today, and dad came home. If I keep winning, daddy gonna be home. And so, and then from that, that was the click. From that point on, every kid that was in front of me, I just want to beat the kid. You know, of course, years go by, I understood that wasn't that, but that was my drive on the beginning. So I can count on like on my hand the times that I lost like on the kids belt, because that was the drive.
That wasn't too much pressure to put on yourself.
I think nowadays I understand that pressure is perspective. Mm-hmm. Right. I talk to a lot of my students, that are competitors. Right, because we have a lot of students that are non-competitors. Like most of the students are non-competitors. Like I think that's in every school. But for the students that are competitors, a lot of them, they talk with me about pressure. Like, and my question is like, why do you feel pressure? Because, pressure of win, or don't want to let you down, or like, all those are going to be like common answers, right? Like fear of losing, or fear of make a costly mistake that like you're gonna end up losing, and all those things. And then for me is, I have a rule that I just cannot lose to myself, right? I can lose to any man that is better than me. That day, if that guy that compete better than me, that's fine. I will go back to the school and then train to improve that aspect. What I cannot lose is to myself. When what I mean by that, by slacking on the training in every aspect of the training, going to the jiu-jitsu part, and then of course, and then like strength and conditioning, nutrition, and so on. So if I do everything that I have to do, like I don't feel any pressure. I'm confident on my skills. I mean, I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it does. Absolutely does. I'm just wondering how come most people don't think about it that way. Why are we always trying to compare ourselves to the other people? Why we always put that pressure on us versus thinking to what you're saying is, I'm the only obstacle. I'm the challenge. Everything else is just part of my training. This is just part of what is around me. Why do you think we don't think that way?
I don't know, Matt. I'm going to be honest. Like me, one thing that I do, and then I can share that with the listeners, like every day I compete against myself. And what I mean by that, I have a match against myself on my mind. Okay, we're exchanging grips, how I would throw myself. Okay, I'm on bottom, how to sweep myself. Okay, I'm on top, how to pass my guard. Okay, and as crazy as it sounds, I do that every day, you know. And that helps me a lot because I always like, I cannot always fix my weakness because nobody's perfect, right? But I'm always aware of my weakness and where I cannot let you get. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So if I have a solid block to not let you get to where I know you cannot get, and I know that, I just have to do what I'm supposed to do. Like either like on my feet or on top or on bottom. I feel like a lot of people, they're going to compete against someone and then they're going to study all those videos, tendencies, all that. And then that's cool. That's part of the training process. I do study videos, but I'm more concerned with what I have to do than what you do for them. Because if I'm putting in place what I have to do, like automatically you cannot do like your tendencies, how you like to attack, how you like to approach, and then so on.
Essentially, what you're saying is that you are fixing what you can manage. You can't change your opponents. You can't change your training partners. You can't change what's around you. You can't change here. This me is the only thing I can change, and you focus on that every day.
Yeah, exactly. And then, like, if I cannot say that I don't put pressure on myself, the pressure that I put on myself is like, can I do it? Can I make it happen? Or I have done. Can I make it happen again? Because I think everyone can win once, and then people are going to say, well, I got lucky or this or that. But when repeatedly, like, when you consistently win, right? Because there are different types of win as well. There is the win that you barely win. There's the win that you dominate. There's the win that, like, people don't even, like, the whole tournament couldn't score on you, right? And then, like, I put those challenges on for myself on the training. So every day that I go, and I'm going to go back to the mindset of the training, because then, like, I match myself. Then I go for a training session with my students, and then I'm going to have goals. And then can be various goals. Can be throwing everybody, can be not be thrown by anybody, can be sweep everybody, can be passing everybody's guard, can be having to finish everybody from a specific position, you know, can be not letting anybody score even an advantage on me. All right, so... That way, when I go to a tournament, you know, of course, I've been like, we talk like over three decades, right? But of course, so like I think doing that when I go to a tournament, it is really just another day on the match, like on the mat doing matches. Mm-hmm. You know, like there is no difference. The only thing that changes is the environment.
So the pressure, so you're not adding the pressure. You're essentially, in your mind, you're performing the same way as you would be training at home or at the academy.
Because my goal is proof to myself that I can, like, I'm not trying to, I want to beat so-and-so. Like, you know, of course, like, when you see, like, a big name, let's say, I was able to compete against... like Demian Maia, Fernando Tererê, Marcelo Garcia, Xande Ribeiro, Roger Grace, Ronaldo, like André Galvão, Bush. I went through generations, right? I go back to competing against Saulo and Jamelão, all the way to compete against like Buchecha and Rodolfo, right? So I passed, I don't know, like through like four generations maybe competing. as adult black belt. So of course, like, you want to defeat the bigger names. But for me, defeating the bigger names wasn't about defeating the guy. It was like proving to myself that I could get done, because I always believed that I don't have to be better than anybody. I just have to be able to compete better than everybody. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Being better than somebody else versus performing than somebody else is two different things.
Yeah, because life is a competition. Like, maybe we both did law school, and then we have that big like opportunity in a big company, and there is just one spot. And then maybe I have better knowledge than you in a few things, but if you perform better, you're the one that get the job. Mm-hmm. So, like, you don't have to be better than me. You just have to be able to perform.
Yeah.
So, and you're going to be able to perform if you focus on you, not if you focus on the person.
So let me ask you this then. I mean, when I look at the list of your accomplishments, it's ridiculously long. All across all these years,
over three decades.
Well, like, yeah, but if you look at it, it's quite impressive, and it's very easy to, you know, ask a question like, which one was the best one? But I'm gonna go the other way. Which one was the toughest match that you've had? Do you have one that really sticks in your mind where, you know, maybe things didn't go according to the plan, or perhaps they did go, but man, that was work.
It's like, yeah, there's so many matches. So many matches. I remember, like, I can go back to being like 11 years old. And then because I was winning everything, my master moved me up in a age group to challenge me.
Ah.
Then I won three matches, made it all the way to the final, and then I lost that kid. That his name was Renato Batista. And later he even became my teammate. We were teammates for a while. But like, you see that I remember name and last name.
He made an impression.
Because like, you know, he should be meeting me, right? And then but why it was rough? Because I was shown the face of believing that I have to win to keep my parents together.
Right.
So when I lost, every man, like, it's so clear to me, my dad and my mom, like, why you cry? What you hurt? Is your arm or your neck? And I'm like, and then I'm like, no, no, no. And I just would say no and cry, no and cry, no and cry. And but that was 11 years old, Bruno, right? Then I can go. And it's easy, like, tough is easier to talk to about the losses, right? I remember when I was a purple belt, and then because I started teaching when I was a purple belt, 17 to 18 years old, and then I won a tournament in Rio, Copa Fabar. That was a big traditional tournament back then. And then, like, my name on the magazines, no social media, like, we talk about Grace Mag, Tatami, like, those magazines. And so my name is there, the most technical athlete, or name of the purple belt, blah, blah, blah. Then I go to Worlds, and then I get silver. And then I get silver, like, in a final match that, like, the Tijuca went crazy against Gabriel Vela. It was, like, a crazy back and forth match. Then, like, I thought, like, also, I'm 18 years old, right? I'm one of the best in the world. I thought it was the Mike Tyson of Jiu-Jitsu, right? I thought, like, man. I'm the man. Like, I'm the guy. Like, I have those many students already, a few months of school open. Like, I make my own money. I'm an adult. I'm a man. I don't depend on anybody, right? And then Leo Santos and Fernando Tererê were going to do a super fight in an event in Rio Centro. There was a big, like, arena in Rio. And then I got invited to do a co-main event against Juan Jucão, that, like, he has a school in Atlanta, right? The American Top Team in Atlanta, Juan Carneiro. He is a former UFC fighter. So back then he was like Carson Gracie, right? Carson Gracie, and they're like, oh, you wanna compete against that guy? Juan Jucão, he's like a purple belt under Ricardo Libório. And then I was like, yeah, like, anyone. Like, you know, like, the arrogance, right? And then I remember that Jucão scored, like, about 20 points on me. Like, I think it was 20-4, 21-4, something like that, the match. I remember that the match was over. I shook his hand. I shook Master Libório's hand. Got my prize. Guion still walked to the bus station, got a bus, and went home. I didn't even put the, I didn't even took the gi off. And then, like, the last day teaching at the school, I remember there was, like, someone died. Like, the whole school was in silence. Like, that one was rough. And then, like, because that's when, after that loss, I went almost a year and a half without winning a single tournament.
Why was that so difficult?
Because I didn't know what it was to lose. Like, I lost as a kid, but, like, you kid, you don't even know how you, you don't even know what emotions you're going through, right? Like, you don't know how to deal with your emotions. I think that was the first real loss. Like, me understanding that I lost felt, like, embarrassed by losing in front of my students, felt embarrassed by believing that I was something that I was not. Like, just being humbled by life. You know, and that was a rough, that's when, like, I think that I really believe that, like, I love the jiu-jitsu, because love a sport and love winning are two different things. Mm-hmm. Right? And I always love winning. Who doesn't love win? Right? And I was always successful. Like, I remember I could count on my hand the time that I lost. So, like, oh, when I lose, it was like an accident. Like, I have lost, but I never have lost, like, someone, like, dominating me like he did. Like, I felt like he had answer for everything that I was throwing at him. And so that broke my confidence. And then for a year and a half, I remember that I would go to tournaments every month, and I wouldn't even place. I wouldn't even place.
Many people, many students at that point, they would just quit. I mean, many students, many people, when you experience that kind of emotional impact, and then that follows with a year and a half of not getting back.
Every month.
Right.
More than once a month.
And not getting back up there. I mean, at that point, a lot of people would question themselves whether they are good enough, whether they can do this, whether they should do this. Do you ever question yourself in that moment? Are you ever thinking about not getting back on the mat at all?
Not about not getting back on the mat, but of course I question myself, like, multiple times. Like, you're human, right? You're going to question yourself. After we speak about this, I can give another example, but that's like was like just a few years ago. But anyway, like, and then I remember at one point, my marshal, Wendell Alexander, that I started training with him in 1993. And then I went from orange belt all the way to black belt with him. And then I remember him like, man, like, I want you to not compete for 2 months and just come to campus, because he lived in campus like about 3.5 hours away from Rio de Janeiro, and I just want to come to campus and train with me. And then, like, for me, it was like, I can remember, like, more important than training sessions, like, the conversation that we would have, right? Like, he's reinforcing me, my worth, because my, like, in one point, I was like, attaching my worth to my results in tournament. Mm-hmm. So, like, I wasn't good enough anymore. Why I'm doing what, like, Robinho, Shaolin, Gustavo Dantas, BJ, all those guys doing, and I cannot even, like, place in a tournament. Right? So I was, like, I was attaching my worth to my results. And then when he really helped me with that, right? And then I remember that I went to a tournament, and then he said, no, you're going to set up only for the absolute, because I want you to prove to yourself that you can do that. Like, trust me, you're going to be able to do that. And then I had four matches, and then I won the tournament. And then I remember, like it's happening now, my friends picking me up on their shoulders, and they're like, it's like,
what was
the purple belt?
Was that the first tournament you won after that failure?
Exactly. It's December of 1999. I'll never forget.
What was the feeling?
Copa Novinho.
Talk to me about the feeling. So, like, the match is still going, right? The time is running out. You know you're winning. The buzzer goes off. Your hand goes up in the air. What is going through your mind?
I felt that the world was lifted off of my shoulders. Because for me, it was just like, it wasn't about like who I was fighting. It was like, prove to myself that I could do again. So that's why I say that for me is the time that like I really learned that I love jiu-jitsu. And I learned that I can fight through anything because of the resilience that I had. I didn't know that back then. Like, it's just like, as years go by, and then I start studying, and then I like sports psychology, and like, and all that. And then, like, then I start understand things that at the time, I didn't know what I was going through. I can see things that Wendell did. I can see things that teammates did nowadays. But back then, I wasn't understanding. I was just like following, right? Because I was waiting to do anything to be able to win again, to prove to myself that I could do again.
So what do you attach your worth to now? So it used to be the wins. What is it now?
Mm-hmm. Is how much can I help you? It's just not about being. How much can I help you to be, for you to be the best version of yourself on and off the mats?
I mean,
so if I can make a difference for you, that's how I put my offer. Like, I wanna make sure that I can be the best that I can as a person, and by example, of course, of words, but by example as well, help you to be the best version of yourself. That's my mission for with my children. Right, I have a boy and a girl, and then the mission for my students as well.
You have gone through a lot. I mean, from a success, but also from a failure perspective. And Gary and I, we often talk about this on the show, that success does not come without failure. There has to be at some point, a point where we trip, we fail, we fall, we lose, we fail, we you know, something happens.
You need that to grow.
You need that to grow. And we use that as a step for us to get better. Today, I think the world, the way how it's structured, we often see the beautiful, especially on social media. We see everybody winning. We see the gold medals. We see the flashy things. We see the entertaining things. We don't see as much of the raw things, that things are not as pretty behind the scenes.
That's why I always post my losses.
Well, but let me ask you this. All your students, those who do compete, or maybe perhaps those who experience failure in their life off the mat. Mm-hmm. How do you have these conversations? How do you talk to somebody and tell them, listen, I've been there, and it's the life, this is not end of it. Like, there is more to it. We can use this to learn and grow. Because when we are feeling that failure, when we feel that things are just not working, whether jiu-jitsu or not jiu-jitsu, it's hard. It's very hard to see the future. It's hard to see that it's going to be better. It's hard to see that we can use this moment for us to grow. How do you have these conversations with your students?
I think I always try to make the analogy of jiu-jitsu with life, because every single day that you put your gi on, entire belt, or can be like a no-gi class. You have like your no-gi uniform. You always gonna have a lot of problems that you gonna have to try to solve, right? And then you by experience can know the end, how gonna end by solving that problem, or maybe it's a new problem that you don't know how gonna end, but you still have to make a step forward, right? So, and I think some people, they are afraid of do the first step because they cannot see the other side.
Yeah.
But if you don't make the step, you're just going to keep suffering. And then keep suffering is a choice.
So explain right? that. Explain so, that. Explain. I know what you mean, but I think a lot of people think that suffering is not their fault. A lot of people think that suffering is something that happens to them and they don't have the choice not to suffer. So talk about mm-hmm. that. How do you make that change?
I think like me specifically or how I talk to,
well,
how I talk to people when
well,
I
want. Share how you deal with it.
Mm-hmm. I believe that every problem that you have, first, is perception of how big or small the problem is, right?
Yeah, true.
It's perception. That's perception. So how much importance you're going to give to that problem? And then now that comes like, I think one of the most important questions, what is the good of the problem? Because there is the good of everything, even if you cannot see it, mm-hmm. or even if you're not understanding it, right, at yep. the moment. So you're going to give a step forward because now, like the, how I'm going to say like that? Once you make a step, everything else move. Mm-hmm. And then that's when the pieces start, right? Like unplug. And every single decision that you make gonna have a consequence that's good or bad, right? But you're just gonna know if you make the decision. And the decision is to always move forward. If you choose to stay, if that's like what you're choosing to do it, I cannot tell you like what to do. I can just like help you and try to help you and then show you that there's a still life, right? But it is your choice to be helped or not.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that's the things that I always looking for, like why that happened? Why this is happening? Okay, what's the good? What can I do here? Because sometimes you're gonna think there is a big problem. Let's say, oh, I lost for a school owner, for example. Or let's say like the school owner lost like 20 students on the month of January, just as a mm-hmm. All right. But look at all the other good things that is still happening in your life. Mm-hmm. So that's why the problem is perception.
Yeah. And this is why this is so interesting to me, because again, Gary and I, we talked about this often. There is always a good and a bad side of every situation. We often focus on the negative side because that's what's bothering us, but we refuse to mm-hmm. see the other side, the positive, right? Like even losing 20 students, that's impactful. Like mm-hmm. everybody, we know that as school owners, we know losing mm-hmm. 20 students is huge. However, perhaps we should ask ourselves a question, what impact we made on these 20 students? Maybe maybe they can't train jiu-jitsu, but maybe their life is easier. Maybe, you know, these students moved on because they had a different reasons in their life. Perhaps their life took mm-hmm. them in a different direction and really being hung up on the fact that they are no longer here just creates this negative vibe. And then I don't know about you, but I know if I get in this negative surrounding that I am negative, then I bring the negative home. My kids are negative. Everything else is negative, and it's kind of a domino effect. It spreads very fast, and it's very difficult to get back into this positive mindset and get good things done.
Well, not only that, but you can say to yourself, okay, 20 students left. Why? And what can I learn from it? What can I do differently?
Exactly.
So that 20 more don't go someplace.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to give you an example. Another day, my son, he was complaining about something that all his friends have and he doesn't have, right? And then I asked him, so what which friend of yours went to Bulgaria 2 years ago and then had like judo and jiu-jitsu training while in vacation and then going to a spa and everything? Like, and he looked at me like, none. Okay, like which friend that you, of yours went to Brazil last year to compete and won the tournament? None. Okay, which friend of yours, like in January of this year, went to a cruise, like where they have jiu-jitsu every day and then you could hang out and go to incredible, beautiful places and everything, and then like enjoy life? He like, none. I was like, so why you need, what you asking for? Because it was a cell phone, right? And for me, like all my friends in school have a cell phone. Like, you're 9 years old, you don't need a cell phone.
No. Why do we need to suffer like that though, as people? Because we do it as adults too, right? We need we make ourselves suffer because we want all these. We don't look at what we have.
I understand here, like, oh, all my friends have, like I should have. I understand, like, he's on his right? Like, oh, if all my friends have, like, why not me? But like, he's having much more life experience than his friends are having.
Yeah.
Learning much more.
But you know, at times, like bringing this onto the mat, into jiu-jitsu, sometimes students compare themselves to other individual on Instagram, a complete stranger they don't even know. Mm-hmm. And like, I had this conversation with a few of my students. They come up to me and they say, look at this blue belt can do blah, 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 and blah, 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 blah. And I cannot do that. You know, they are much better than me. You know, I need to study more. And like, at that point, the conversation begins. It was like, wait a minute. First of all, they might have rehearsed this video 27 times. So that's one.
Mm-hmm.
But two, does this really define you? Is this what you really should know? Look at the things that you do know. And creating this, why do you think we compare ourselves so much to other people versus focusing on us?
I think one of the reasons is because people look for validation. Look, I can do as well. Look, I'm capable as well. Like, but like, not for them, like they try to show to other people.
Yeah.
Because they wanted the validation
of
other people. That's just my opinion. I'm not saying that I'm right. It's just thinking that people always look for the validation. That's why I always tell my students that for me, the first thing that I think is me. Because if I'm not focused on my growth or being the best that I can be for myself, how can I be the best that I can be for my wife, for my children, for the students, and so on? Because people always talk about like serving, giving, and then like not themselves. Like, a lot of people talk about that nowadays, I feel. And then for me, the most important person in my life is me. Because if I'm not 100%, I cannot be 100% for anybody else. I try to tell people like to don't focus like in what the people are doing. It's like focus on themselves and then try to do everything that they can possibly can, all right? Because everyone is different. And then if you do that, now what do people do? And then you care for the people. That's awesome. It's my awesome. Gary can do that. Oh, that's awesome. Matt can do that. Like, I'm happy for them, right? For Gary, for Matt, and then for the people. And they're like, oh, and then I can do that. So I'm happy for me because I know I'm being the best I can be for myself.
Yeah, I've read it somewhere, and I don't remember which book this was on, but they were talking about exactly the same thing as you're talking about right now. And they compared this to the emergency procedure on the airplane. You put your mask on first, take care of yourself, then you help your kids. It's not the other way around. If you can't breathe, you can't help your child. You can't help your spouse. You can't help the person next to you. And I think a lot of people get, they have a big heart. They want to help.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But the order of priority, who is more important, often they put others in front of themselves. And this is where their growth, one, is not as big, but also I think this is where some of these confidence obstacles come in play, and I'm not able to achieve the goals, and some of those struggles in life where I didn't get to do what I wanted to do with my life. Now it's too late. Like, we're going into these areas of really it's difficult for us to recover from them. Gary, what do you think about that?
Yeah, well, there's a flip side too, right? But I think oftentimes when people hear that you should focus on yourself, they think of what we were just talking about, right? Your son and his cell phone. They think of these material things, but we're also talking about being able to give back to others, right? So and I think there has to be a clear distinction. When you say focus on yourself, you're talking about focusing on things that make you a better person.
Correct.
Not something that makes you better at something else or gives you some materialistic thing. And I just want people to be clear on that, because otherwise, you know, that you become selfish at that point, right? And I think what we're talking about is building yourself up enough so that you can be selfless, so that you can give back properly. And it doesn't affect anyone negatively.
Well, I think that's often visible, and I'm curious what you think about this, but this is often invisible with instructors in jiu-jitsu, where obviously we have our students. We need to teach them. This is our job. This is what we do. But sometimes the instructors fall into this area where they devote so much time to the students where they don't have any time for themselves. And then they stop training. They stop doing anything jiu-jitsu related. And I personally know people who've been in those positions and they stop liking jiu-jitsu, even though this is their passion, this is their love. Mm-hmm. And it's like you don't want to be in these spots. You want to put yourself as number one. You want to train, even though it's hard to find time. You want to train because that passion, the continuous learning, the continuous education on the mat, now you can share that with your students. Now they are benefiting more. What do you think about that?
I always make time for myself. Like I'm sure to say, because it's something that is very important for me. One thing that I believe as well is that I cannot request anything that I'm not willing to do myself. Right. So I should compete because I enjoy competition. Mm-hmm. I love competition. I love the process to the competition. If you guys ask where my medals are, I don't know. Probably gonna have to ask my wife. Because for me, it's really like, yes, I wanted the gold medal, but it's not about the medal. For me, it's like who I become every process that I go through. Mm-hmm. And that is going to translate for how much I can try to help my students. Mm-hmm. Right. So like for me, it's really about the process. And I see a lot of guys and girls that retire and then like they just like, oh, I don't enjoy the process anymore. Yeah. And man, I understand. because that's the hardest part. Compete, it is the easiest part, in my view. Right? Yeah. The process, the discipline, the consistency, the commitment, the resilience, those are the things that it is hard to do a lot of times, like over and over and over. And we're going to say over and over until the podcast is over.
Yeah.
Right? Because and I understand that. So, Bruno, do you say you're going to compete forever? Like, no, I don't think so. I think going to get a point where it's not about the process, just my body maybe don't gonna be able to handle the process anymore, right? Because end of the day, I think 43 that I am now, right, is not old by any means, but when you put 33 years of miles on that, on those 43, you know, so I don't compete as much as I used to compete, for example.
Yeah.
Right. But I still enjoy that. And then like going back for the questions, like, so I always make time for myself to be able to do things that I enjoy. Right. Yeah. So today before I talk to you guys, I already had like a mobility session with my sister, and then I had already a yoga session with my instructor, because those two things help me to stay longer on the mats, gonna help me to stay for more years active on the mats. It's not only competing, like be able to teach and share like the experience, like, because I teach kids classes every day. Like, I love to be with the kids. And I have my own kids, right? And I love to be on the mats with the students. And then if I'm in pain, I cannot be myself. I can be on the mats, but not be myself, right? Because people see when you're in pain, when you're uncomfortable, right? So I'm willing to do everything. So I do your natural Budokan mobility. I do physical therapy to prevent. I do yoga. I do strength and conditioning. You know, all that are outside of jiu-jitsu. Outside of jiu-jitsu. And then even though I don't have to make weight, like I'm an ultra heavy competitor, right? Like I have a nutritionist, because how I eat impacts on how I train, impact on how I recover, impact on how I sleep, impact on my mood, like and everything. So, and then I think that shows not just my love for jiu-jitsu, but my commitment to myself, so I still can enjoy jiu-jitsu and share that with people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the big one. Commitment. Discipline,
resilience, writing it all down.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's like, I think oftentimes, and again, Bruno, I'm curious what you think about this, but oftentimes students talk about motivation, and it's like a big reflection in my mind. Oftentimes, motivation gets us started, but discipline and consistency is gets us to the end. This is what gets us through that process.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the motivation. Motivation just gets us off the chair. That's all it does. Gets us just to start. Gets us to step on the mat. That's all it does. This is just the beginning. We didn't even start yet. The mm-hmm. consistency, the discipline, is the resilience, it's the commitment. Is that what really gets us through this entire process and makes us successful at the very, very, very end.
100%.
Nice. Bruno, we've been at this for an hour, and we do want to be respectful of your time, but as always, time flies when you're having a great conversation and deep conversation, such as this one. But listen, before we start wrapping this up, What we do end of every episode is we have a question from a previous guest. Our previous guest asked a question, but they had no idea that you will be answering it. So they asked the question completely in blind. They knew it will be a black belt, but they had no idea who exactly would be. Gary is going to take a lead on this, and he's going to ask you the question. This is going to be good.
Yeah, this is a good one. This is from Josh McKinney, who hosts I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu. And he wants to know, if you had 3 years to turn someone into a purple belt world champion, what would your approach be? And they have no experience. You're starting from scratch. White to purple. You want them to be a purple belt world champion.
So they won't try out student?
Yep.
In 3 years, you'll be a purple belt world champion?
That's the question.
That's a lot of work for you, but...
So let's start that we need to have a special person, like special athlete, right? Like you're going to be need a special athlete to be able to do that. And then that special athlete will be committed to the process. Right. That's another question. Like for the athlete, with my competitors, for example, I tell them that if I ever feel that I want them to win more than they want themselves, I know that they don't want to win. And that's why when I compete, I have the rule of not losing to myself. I want. If I'm competing, I want. And I want so much that I'm committed to the whole process. Right, so like in 3 years, we have some special athletes coming up in jiu-jitsu, and then, but it is hard to say like something specific. I think it's the whole, if that's possible, is the whole package, right? It is the person being committed to the process, being there every day, multiple times a day, and plus the all other extra like two activities to help enhance the jiu-jitsu, right? And hopefully things fall into place. And then why I say hopefully things fall into place, because we know that we can do everything that we can possibly can, but we have no control over the outcome. So I can do everything that I believe in 3 years, like technical wise, skill wise, strategy wise, everything, but I cannot control the outcome. How the bracketing gonna be, if he's gonna win the first, second match, but he's gonna pull a little bit the muscle on his hamstring or like whatever it is, right? Or he won like three matches already, like three more matches to go, but he had a little tweak on the knee when he tried to escape from De La Riva. Like, and it's so much that you have zero control. So I think besides everything falling into place, I mean, besides everything like goes right on the process, they shouldn't be committed. The instructor be committed, a full team, and when I say a full team is, I feel like a lot of people on this generation, because we're a generation, social media and everything, and Google as well. So you just Google stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm doing that workout that I saw. I'm doing that diet that I saw. Like, no, you have a jiu-jitsu coach. You have that jiu-jitsu coach that maybe don't want to be the instructor, because you can instructor and coach are two different things. So maybe the instructor and coach will be going to be the same person, maybe not. A strength conditioning coach, mobility coach, nutritionist, physical therapist, like all for me, like all that plays, right? All that plays, and then like at the end, you still hope that everything falls into place because you have no control over the outcome. I don't know if that is the best, is the answer that he expect, that I was hoping for, but I just don't believe, I don't believe, like, in, for a lack of a better word, like, in miracles when it comes to that, right? I think you're prepared, and when the opportunity comes, you take advantage.
So essentially what you're saying is that the only thing you can really control when it comes to situation like this, when we're hunting the amazing results, the only thing we can control is the work that we put into. Everything else, there is a little bit of luck. There is a little bit of circumstances. There is definitely the hard work that we've done, but there is more than just that. Sometimes we find ourselves in a spot where we can work, do everything perfect, and things still don't go according to plan.
All you can control is your preparation. You're the one that can control how much effort you're putting into.
Absolutely.
Another day, I did a secret training with the students, with some of my students, competitors, and then I was able to finish first. And then, like, I'm 43, and they were between 16 and 25. Like, I got mad. I cannot be 43 and finish first. I can, and then I went to, like, I cannot be 43 ultra heavy with a broken body and finish first. So that means that, like, I'm saying that story because I think also sometimes people do not understand their limits, and they don't understand how to push the limits, how to push beyond the limits.
Yeah.
For me, I was like, just was like a workout. Every training session that you see me training, if you guys have opportunity to see me training or train with me, like on the end, like, I'm done. I give everything. Because in order to win a tournament and not lose to myself, I have to give everything. And I think people, like, manage how much effort they're going to put. So they don't get too tired, or, like, on the chain, they don't lose, or they don't want to lose a round at the gym. But, like, for me, it's like how much closer to reality I get every training session. So I challenge myself every training session that I do. Otherwise, it's just like, it's like you go to the gym, just do a regular workout like any other person. And I think if you cannot be wanting to have special results with average effort.
Makes sense. That's the harsh truth. You can't be amazing with a mediocre effort. You can't.
My wife says that sometimes, like, I have to be nicer. That, no, that's not everybody going to have that mindset. I was like, no, nobody has to have the mindset that I have. Everybody's different. But let's say Gary comes to me and they're like, Bruno, I'm moving to Midland, going to train 1 year with you to go to my show. She says, like, on my mind, we sign a contract where, like, my job is to try to put, like, Gary on the best version of himself possible. But if he doesn't commit the same, because it's two-way street, if he doesn't commit the same, and then goes back to what I said, like, I cannot feel that I want more than you want yourself.
But by the way, it's not gonna happen. But by the way, he's packing right now. I'm on my way to
Texas. My brother lives in Texas.
Hey, like, Midland is beautiful. You're gonna see it. Nothing to do but jiu-jitsu.
No distractions.
I love it. Professor, what a phenomenal conversation. I took pages and pages of different notes. Before we wrap this up formally and officially, Where can our listeners connect with you? I mean, are you on social media, websites, and anything available if anybody wants to ask you questions directly, how they can connect with you?
I think Instagram is the easiest one, right? Bruno at Bruno Bastos BJJ. So I think that's the easiest one. I'm always on Facebook as well, but I think Instagram is the easiest one. And I'm also on Twitter. But the one that I use most, the one that I use most, and I think the easiest one to ask to get have access to me. I mean, I was pretty good on responding people. People like send a message about like, or either they got an instruction from me, like on BJJ Fanatics, or like they did a seminar, and then they be able to use a technique, and then like. Or they see me in a tournament doing something, and then they use like they try to apply on the gym or in a tournament themselves. And they, so I'm always going on reply. Women like when you reach out to me or like you reach out, or I like reply, right? Yeah. Because I think part of me be committed to help people is being open as well, right? To be there engaging, like every time, like, of course I have like time for my wife, for my kids and everything. And then like, but, I'm always try to be connected. So when people have questions or anything, I'm always there for them.
Awesome. Beautiful. Phenomenal. And as always, we'll include all the notes, all the links and notes into the show notes of this episode. So feel free to reach out to Professor if so you desire. And then if you are in Texas, make sure you swing by at the nice, warm, toasty Texas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Midland, Texas. Again, if I can just real quick, I would like to thank my sponsors, if that's okay.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
Drop them in.
Like Fuji has been with me since 2013. I did a MMA fight for a Legacy Fighting Championship. I think nowadays they changed the name for the organization, but that's how I compete with Fuji for the first time. And then I compete Master Worlds. And then 2014, I became official athlete. And then as you guys know, I said, like, I always like want to be a judoka. So I follow Jimmy Pedro since 1996. So when I had the chance to meet him, as you saw the Expo 2014, and he offered me Fuji sponsorship. For me, like, I was like kind of like starstruck. Like, I was like, whoa, Jimmy's talking to me. He knows who I am. Right. So I think I just want to thank Jimmy for the opportunity to work with Fuji Sports and Fuji Max. New Hope Regeneration, stem cell therapy, that's something that changed my life. My quality of life, very different after then. So New Hope of Regeneration, another one of my sponsors. Water CBD, always with their products that help me as well on my recovery. And the BJJ Fanatics with their partnership with me. My instructions are going to be recording. I'm going to be recording more content with them now in May. So I'm going to be putting more stuff for people. Hope you guys enjoy what's coming up.
Wonderful. Well, and so it happens. Fuji Sports sponsors this show, and we are very familiar with Jimmy. We very familiar with Jimmy. We've had him on the show, and Travis Stevens and the crew at Fuji has been quite generous with us and working with us for quite a bit. So we are always happy to plug them in, and great to see that they continue working with athletes all around, such as yourself, and obviously BJJ Fanatics. Great place to swing by, get all the instructionals from so many different instructors. I can't even speak anymore. But let's formally wrap this up. Thank you, Professor Bruno. Thank you for sharing the knowledge, the experience, your story, and such a deep thoughts on some of those complex topics that we often face on and off the mat in our lives. Gary?
Yeah, beautiful stuff. I really appreciate it, and I'll see you down there in Texas. I'm on my way.
Well, gonna be waiting for you guys. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I'm just going to repeat the mantra for Team Lead BJJ. That's the association that I run. Live every day to achieve your dreams.
Beautiful. Oof.
Love it.
Beautiful.
Let's wrap this up.
Peace. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Raw Radio. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review and help us make the show even more amazing. For future episodes, check out our website and follow us on all major podcast platforms. Take care.
Yeah, this is all off the record right now, but I'm going to start it.